everybody. My name's John Keefe. I'm an alcoholic. Never had talked in a hut before. But anyway, I'm glad to be here. I actually, with timing myself, I thought I'd give myself plenty of time and cut a little close, but I did get here. And that's 90% of the battle, is finding the place and then showing up. So I got here. I was, one time I spoke, in 1963, I spoke in Long Beach at a meeting and convention. And I didn't get asked to speak again until 1978. And I don't know what I said in 63. And I don't think anybody else did either. But anyway, it's always an honor to come down here to Pacific Group. I got a haircut for the occasion. And got my it's another CNR coat, but I had the wife put it in the cleaners, and because I really look forward to coming down here. I see a lot of people down here that I get to see only when I come down here, and it's really neat. I could have entertained all my friends in a phone booth when I got to AA. I mean, I had a personality like a dead horse. I was bad news, is what I was. I was just always looking for somebody to take care of me, and I was always waiting to be discovered, and then I found out when I come to AA, no one was looking for me. And in fact, there was very little demand for my type. I couldn't believe it. I had a program before I got to AA. It was called Take Something, You'll Feel Better. And I was just preoccupied with taking stuff. My mind was always worried about supply. It just seemed like I spent every waking moment wondering if there was going to be enough at all. And it didn't start out that way, but I only had about 10 years out there, so you know it really caught up with me fast. I really pooped when I got here. And thank you, sir. I heard, you probably heard the guy too, he said he spoke for 15 minutes, and some guy way in the back says, "Hey, I can't hear you." And the guy in the front seat says, "I can hear him real good. Would you like to trade places?" And but anyway, I was one of those loser, user, loser types, and that was my program, and I would still be out there. I wouldn't be here, I'll tell you. If that stuff was still working, I'd still be trying out something, you know. And but it quit working. It's like so many people that are here tonight, it finally got to where I was paying a hell of a price, you know. I was a guy laying face down yelling, "Let's get high." I couldn't go anymore. But you know what? I was going to keep doing it. I was going to keep trying. And that's the insanity of alcoholism. That's why I understand it. I was going to keep going until I ran out of carcass. And I was like the, I think it was Paul that spoke here ahead of me. My liver had gone sour on me. I looked like I'd eaten a sack of cement. And I was, purple was the stuff I was drinking, with yellow eyeballs. And I was very colorful. And and I wasn't feeling well either. That was important for me, is to get really sick, because I had to get physically sick. I know my sponsor says that it was the mental that got him. And somewhere I don't know, somewhere the physical and the mental finally combined, and I was just always in pain. Just always in pain. I was like a guy with a bad sunburn in a backslappers convention. I just always, just always knew I was going to get hurt, you know. And so I tried to stay loaded. And that was probably the most consistent thing I ever done in my life. And that was take something, you'll feel better. And anyway, I didn't stay out there long. I was pooped out. I had one doctor there that got me into a hospital. And he said that I looked like I was about 40. And I was actually 25. And he said, I think you only got about 5 years left. And, you know, I was really elated that I had 5 years left. I didn't think I was going to make it out of the office. And he gave me a prescription, phenobarbital, for nervousness. And I always got nervous when I quit drinking. I'd get real nervous. And I'd eat those juju pills until I'd get so goofy. I'd find myself standing in a corner and didn't know how I got there. And so I was going to stay with it, though. I was going to keep waiting for someone to fix me. Somebody out there fix me. And, you know, I kept going to a lot of people that didn't know how to fix me. You know, I didn't know that. I'd been to AA briefly, but I knew you couldn't do it. And you had goofy things like, back when I was in the hospital, the AAs used to come in and they'd say things like, we don't take anything anymore. Oh. We started to pray. Oh, how bad. I knew that wasn't going to work. I've been praying my buns off all my life. And I used to pray to win the chocolate cake at the church bazaar, you know. And I wouldn't even get a crumb off the damn thing. So I had come to a cornered rat variety. I mean, I was in a corner and no place else to go. And the AAs were good to me. They were kind. I didn't have any rough treatment. They almost knew that I wasn't going to be able to make it, and they was hanging on because they wanted me to share. I wouldn't share. You know, the funny thing about it, when I was out there, I played so damn many different roles, but one of them was that I had gotten cool. When you're cool, all you could do is sit against the wall and be cool. Also, I had gotten tough. I was one of them hombre type, you know. And in fact, I ran around with a lot of guys. We was always talking about smashing some guy's face to a pulp, you know. Or let's go out and make love to a whole bunch of women. We never did any of them things, but we was always getting ready in case we got the chance. But I couldn't share, and I think really that's the program. I think that's the program because it was working before they had the steps and the books and chip girls and literature racks, and but people got sober because one drunk would talk to another. And I know that's true. It seems that's the way it works to me, is our sharing with one another all the time, telling one another about ourselves. And I couldn't share. Everybody seemed to be older than me, and they were all pure alcoholics. I was an impure alcoholic, and I couldn't tell them about going to people's homes and going to the bathroom and looking in the medicine cabinet, see what was on tap for that night. And drinking shaving lotion when I was a teenager, you know. We used to drink that Minutes. We call it Green Hornet. And there's a lot of soap in that stuff, you know. That just Wood belts would blow bubbles. But I couldn't share, and I tell this is my story. This is probably why there's always about a 15-year gap between my invitations to speak. I don't know. But I come from a Irish Catholic family, and I know you all thought I was Portuguese, probably. I had I was taught by the nuns until the eighth grade, and then my dad was a drinker, and he would do things sometimes that would embarrass us, but most of the time he was happy-go-lucky. He would have those million-dollar highs. But on Sunday, he wouldn't drink. On Sunday, you know, of course, there's probably another Catholic or two out there. On Sunday, we went to Mass. And on Sunday, my dad was dangerous. Us kids stayed the hell away from him. But on that particular Sunday, I'm supposed to go down there and make my first Holy Communion. I studied catechism. I knew all the answers, blah, blah, blah. And smart-ass kid and suit and tie on. And on the way to church there, I don't know why, I reached out alongside the seat. I found a peanut, and I ate it. And then I remembered, hey, I'm not supposed to be eating anything solid from midnight on. They've been telling me you got to fast from midnight on. In fact, if you get thirsty, just touch your lips with a wet handkerchief. And I should have told somebody about that, but I didn't. I went ahead and I walked down the aisle and I received the sacrament. I was afraid to tell anybody. I didn't know what was going to happen to me. And when I did that, I committed a mortal sin. That's as high as you can go in the Catholic Church. And according to the catechism, mortal sins was things like murder, rape, and adultery. I was 6 years old. I'd already hit the big time. I didn't even know how to do those things. But anyway, I never told anybody about that peanut till I got to AA. I never found anybody I could trust. And then what I told you about the peanut, you shared back with me. That's what I love about this program, is we share back. And a little Mexican girl told me she ate a tamale before communion. And then there was a guy, he's from over here someplace, he said he had a jelly bean on Easter Sunday. I never sunk that low. And, hey, a whole bunch of Catholics out there had hot dogs on Friday. You know who you are, I'm not going to point you out. But I took a few side trips before I got to AA, but alcohol was my number one painkiller. I hated being sober. I really hated being sober, and I knew that if I ever had to be sober, I'd go crazy. I knew I'd go insane. But there finally come a time where I didn't give a damn anymore. Even if I was going to go insane, I wanted to be sober. But that took some doing. I had to beat myself up a lot. I got at 16. I got went to see Merchant Seaman, and then I ran around with these guys always saying, let's get high. And every place we went, we tried to find something to use so that we could get high. And goofy stuff. I remember one time I scored some gum opium. I didn't know how to use it, and I ate it. And don't do that. I mean, I could have barfed over this building. I was very sick. But I got in with the guys. We were some of the ports we went to, like the Arabian ports over there, the Muslim countries. There was no alcohol, not that we could get our hands on. And but they had hashies, and I started smoking a hubbly bubbly pipe, and that's when I got cool. That's the funny thing about it. When you smoke dope, you get cool. It goes with the territory. And I started hanging around with these guys who was always saying, what's happening? And I said, I don't know what's happening. No one knew what was happening. And we wore dark glasses at nighttime. And I went to jam sessions. I don't even like that stuff. But I'm buying records and going to the Lighthouse Cafe, and every other customer in there is a narc. And it was weird. But anyway, what's happening, yeah. And took a lot of whites. Man, that's something I just don't recommend. I heard a guy, he was from this area too, he said taking whites is like going 90 miles an hour with your shoes nailed to the floor. And I graduated, at age 19, I remember the kid that was with me was a little bit younger than me, maybe by a month, and he showed me how to tie up my arm, and then I started to, it was like the clock stood still. It seemed like next million years I was going to have one of those belts with the teeth marks in the end of it. And ripping and running, and we hung around the men's room at gas stations. Romantic living. Our outfit was up in the girders, and it just time stood still. Most of the time I was sick. I was all the time sick. The day when I was loaded, a cigarette had burned through my fingers and I wouldn't feel it. That's not high, folks. That's comatose. And so that's what I had for myself. And when I first come into AA, some people said, I listened to them, and they said that the insanity of alcoholism was that they did crazy things while they were drunk. And but I listened longer, and then I heard another alcoholic say that the insanity was, is if I drink tonight after I leave here. You know, every one of you people say, that guy's wacko, he should never drink. But I would drink again. The insanity would be with me again. And that I believe. That's the one that I believe, is that I'll drink again and again. No matter how I used to. My taking more physical exercise at the end of my drinking was crawling on my hands and knees into the bathroom, doing chin-ups on the toilet bowl, yelling for Ralph. And it seemed like I'd do this for hours. And then I would lay on the bathroom floor where it was cool. And my wife would come in, look down at me, and say, why do you do this to yourself? Never had a snappy answer for her. I could have said, I don't want to miss out on all that fun I'm having. But you know, I was going to keep doing this. And then when I lost that that person that took care of me, and I moved back in with my mother, I'd keep her up all night. And then retching. And then in the morning, she'd come in and she said, you know, if a dog ate something that made it that sick, it'd never eat it again. You've got to be crazy. And, you know, she put her finger on it. I was crazy. I was insane. The insanity of alcoholism. I'd do it again and again. And you've seen it. And maybe in your own lives or seen it around you. And I had 1 year there, I don't know why I went that way, but I had three men that I sponsored that all died. Pancreatitis, and one had cirrhosis of the liver, and another one, I guess he had a cerebral hemorrhage. He just filled up his mattress with his life's blood. But all of them knew about AA, been to AA, and yet they kept drinking. So I got to believe it's an insanity. I got to hear you people every day, and I got to see you every day. And if I do that, it seems like I keep that insanity at arm's length. And there's a few things I got to do. I got hospitalized in 1956. In those days, the hospitals didn't cover drunkenness. There was no insurance. And I went in there because of my liver. And in there, I was to hear of AA. And I'd heard of it just in drunken stupors. I'd been with guys that had been in AA briefly and didn't know anything about it. One said it was a religious organization, and the other said that I didn't need it, that I should just practice moderation, which I had been trying to do for a lot of years. But in that hospital, my sponsor had 5 years. And 5 years was a lot of time. because he had almost every alcoholic that was in that valley would come and visit him every night. And he would point to my room, and they'd all come into my room and stare at me. And I just laid there guilty. And that's when I heard those things, that they didn't take anything anymore, because I was hoping one of them would be holding some pills. I hated being sober. I didn't want to sober up. And I had sobered up. I'd sobered up on chips. I had gone in withdrawal on chips, and I had hallucinated, and I'd done all those things. And I was afraid to death of being sober. But I had to be sober. I drank and after AA and lost my family, my wife and my baby, and a little girl 3 years old. I had abused them. And you know, I found out something after I come in AA. I did not have the ability to give. I couldn't give anything to anybody. I could share with you after we OD'd on whatever we were sharing, but I could not give. And I was completely turned inward. And I studied myself. My eyeballs turned inward. I was always looking inside. What about me? Am I going to get my fair share? You know. And it's always been that way. It's hard for me not to do that. I still, I just got to force myself. But the AAs have managed to help me in that regard. Once in a while, I find myself doing something for somebody else. It's rare. I always do things under duress. And but I got had to get busy. I got into I didn't sober up in 56, and moved back in with Mom. Committed suicide one night with Mom. She had no one could understand. They were all trying to fix me in their way. In fact, the Irish are drinkers, and she said, and everybody around me said, "You're drinking too fast. You're drinking on an empty stomach," because I hadn't eaten for days. "You're drinking when you're angry." I was angry all the time. "And you're drinking mixed drinks." My idea of a mixed drink was dropping two reds and a glass of wine. I didn't drink like they did. And I wasn't drinking whiskey anymore. That was so important that I romanticized booze. I was like on those TV ads. I just really dug that. The magazines, you know, the back cover, a guy standing on a dead bull elephant, you know, with a big game rifle and a drink in his hand. I said, "Man, that's really living, you know. Tough on bull elephants, but it's really." But that's what I had to get over, romanticizing booze. That it wasn't that chest beating, John Wayne smash him in the face kind of stuff. That wasn't me. I was a little wimp. And I could no longer take care of myself. I was totally dependent on adults to take care of me. I had a panel out of Pat State Hospital. I could identify with those people. They were locked up, not because they were their brain didn't work good, but their emotions were like mine. They had the emotions of maybe a three-year-old, four-year-old, and that was me. I had the deformed emotions. And I got... Mom kicked me out. I will forget that day. It was horrible. One day she says, "I'm taking you shopping and I'm buying you a suitcase." So, I knew I was going to travel. And I didn't want to leave. But, I couldn't make it out there. I'd been around the world three times on those old rusty tankers, and I thought I knew all there was about living, but I didn't know. I couldn't make it. And I got jailed, and the officer that went and booked me was a redhead, about my age, 25, 26 years old. Shoes were shined. Clothes were clean. His eyes was bright. His hair combed, shaven. Seemed to be content at what he was doing. He was fingerprinting me. And I was I didn't ever get a 502. I didn't have a car there towards the end. That's part of it. No one would lend me one either for some strange reason. And they didn't think I could reach the pedals laying face down, probably. But I looked out of the corner of my eyes. I'm in a pair of khakis, high-top tennis shoe on, low-top tennis shoe on. My belongings in a Vaughn shopping bag, and hadn't shaved or combed my hair, and I felt like a bum. I felt like a bum. And I looked out of the corner of my eyes. I looked at that guy. I said, how do they do it? How does people do that? How do they make it? And without drinking, you know. But he was doing it. I come back to AA. When I left that, the judge told me, don't be drinking in San Bernardino County. So I walked into Los Angeles County. The county lines are right alongside. It only took me maybe 3-4 miles. And I was back into Los Angeles County. And I wanted to be sober. And I never wanted to be sober. I hated being sober, but I wanted to be sober. And I come back to AA. Your people were waiting for me. You put your arms around me. I didn't want you to put your arms around me, but you did anyhow. I found out some in AA, people in AA do things because it makes them feel good. That's why they do those things. I sat in so many participation meetings, and you have too, where someone was talking. They say, today I paid my child support. It made me feel good. Another person says, I went and had a chance to rip off the boss, and I didn't do it. It made me feel good. A woman says, I lit my cigarette, and at the end, I didn't light it in the middle like I used to do. It made me feel good. Or I put my lipstick on. I didn't do my eyebrows at the same time, you know. Made me feel good. Made me feel good. I kept hearing that. You people have found a way to live that made you feel good. You felt good, and you wasn't taking anything. That was the mystery to me. You was feeling high, and you wasn't taking anything. And so I stuck around because I had no place else to go. I would have left in a second. But I stuck around and I listened. And eventually I shared. And eventually they put me to work. And I had the panel out of Patton State Hospital for 2 years. I'd open my meeting like this. I was a panel chairman only once a month. And I'd hear that high falsetto squeal of a man that convulsing, seizures they call it now. And he'd fall out on the floor and they'd run to him and they'd put a baseball cap or a wallet in his mouth, try to keep him from chewing his tongue, I guess. And then when it was all over with, he didn't know what happened. And they'd take him out of the meeting and then someone would say, he hadn't drank for 10 years, he's a wet brain. You know, it was things like that. And then I had Glenn Helm, I had all of those. And then I got to see where an alcoholic finally ends up. Sometimes it happens quick. Sometimes it takes a long time. Maybe sometimes it takes 40 years. But always that seems to be the end. And it happens that way. I was sober a year. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. I was sober 60 days. See, and I knew that something had happened for you, I thought. But nothing was happening. I couldn't feel anything. And I was sober 60 days, and one night I slept. And if you've ever been a user, you know that you're never going to sleep again. You know, even after you die, you're going to be wide awake for 2 weeks. I slept. And I slept 8 hours. And I woke in the morning. I said, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, God. Something had happened. And so that was the beginning. And it's been good. I've sober a year, and my sister come to my apartment. As I didn't have a driver's license, the state of California ripped off my driver's license. So my sister come and she's crying, and she said Jimmy died, and Jimmy was my oldest brother. And I went to the house and waited for the coroner to come, and Jimmy had. Was an addict, and I used to rip and run with him, but he got to where he didn't like me anymore because I'd become a wino, and he was dead, and I waited with his body till the coroner came. He was 32 years old, and I wondered at that time why he never found this program. And then I realized over a period of time that not many do. It's really And there's something in the book that says AA is for those that want it, not those that need it. And if it was for those that needed it, there wouldn't be a meeting hall big enough to hold us all. But it's for those that want it, and I still want it. But anyway, that was one of the things that... And then my wife, who had divorced me, one day I went to pick up my little girl, and she had married again. And I was... But I wasn't thirsty anymore. I didn't think about drinking anymore. I hurt all over the place. But I no longer wanted to take anything. I wanted to live some kind of life where I didn't have to take anything. I didn't have to go into the medicine cabinet or wonder about supply or can I make it or line up in front of Jay's liquor store at 6 in the morning. I liked the freedom of not having to do that. But anyway, I was sober 5 years. And I knew I was going to be the monk of AA. In my area in Pomona, there was one woman for every 40 alcoholics. And the one woman looked like she drank a long time. And she was, I steaming on her anyhow. But, I went to a meeting in Ontario at the Fishing Game Club, and standing under one of those dead deer heads they had there, and I went to meetings every night, no place else to go, and this beautiful Mexican girl walked in front of me wearing a tight red sweater. I had a spiritual awakening right away. I wondered what she had and was willing to go to any lengths to get it. And, of course, she says I got it before she's restored to sanity, but that's her problem. But anyway, Alberta and myself have been married 25 years. And when we first started our romance, George in Ontario said, don't get emotionally involved. George was 70. And I said, we didn't, but she got pregnant. And... she gave me this little girl, and the little girl is 26 years old now, and she made me a grandpa, and this happened here 4 years ago, and it happened on a Sunday morning meeting, and my little, some guy, I was at the Sunday morning meeting at Triangle Club. And someone tapped me, Harry the clown tapped me on the shoulder and said, your little girl just made your grandpa in the same hospital that I died out in 56. I tell you this because when I went into the hospital this time, I'm clean and I'm sober and I'm shaved, my hair is combed, my eyes is clear. And I'm coming from an AA meeting, I'm with an AA member and we're going to see my grandson. And I'm crazy about that kid. My little girl, she married a guy, his last name is Morales. And she said, Dad, if I have a boy, I'll give him an Irish first name. My grandson's name is Timothy Morales. And I got, when I seen Timmy, I was crazy about that little kid. AA had taught me how to love, just a little bit, but a little bit, but Timmy was everything that I had. And about a year ago, Timmy learned how to say Toys R Us. And And those, he's into Transformers. I don't know if you know what Transformers are. But they're a good $30 a pop, you know. And I took him out and bought him one the other day. And, you know, I can't put them damn things together. I can't hardly get them out of the box. And that little kid is 4 years old, and I see those little fingers of his, and he slaps those suckers together, and it's very amazing. I'm a man most blessed. And tonight was a beautiful meeting. The two people that shared ahead of me, I just love AA. They shared with me, And that's important. And you people have shared with me. That's important. You've told me, you know. And he was willing to share with me. I don't know. I got a few grandkids now, six of them. And I'm up to 57 years old. And it don't bother me anymore. I'm healthier now than I was when I got to AA. And at least I feel that way. That's important. Probably not. But today I didn't have to take anything. Nothing. And tonight most likely I'll sleep good. I'll probably sleep good. And that's a miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.